And now for something completely different. I don't want to give away too much. I don't want to ruin it for you, the surprise. But this is not my podcast. I mean, it is. It's a different podcast. And it's one that may never get completed, but I sure hope it does. I've been wondering how best to try to spur myself toward a different project for a long time, far longer than you can probably imagine. Whether you know it or not, I've wanted to write fiction since I was about 15, 16 years old, and I've tried my hand a few times. I've got a number of books that remain incomplete. And the most recent one, which is going on 6, 7 years now, and is maybe a third done. Well, it starts like this. Morning had come to the little house in Elusa. The small village, nestled on the roadside to Ambra, was little more than a hamlet. A few farmers, a blacksmith, a butcher, one lawyer who called himself the mayor, and Anira. She and her daughters. The late Anira and her daughters. The late Anira's daughters and her newborn son. Morning had come to the house in the bleak of early dawn, when the moon still hung on the horizon, crescent-faced and lonely. The birds were not yet stirring, and the crickets had gone to bed. And Anira screamed in the torment of contractions gone wrong. The people of the village were awake. They heard her in her agony, but none came to her aid. Her young daughters were left to fend for her, rushing to the well and boiling water on their little hearth, soaking up the blood in the rags of their skirts. The virgin daughters of the whore. The whore who was bearing a child. The child of a man in the village. The men in the village who were married, each to a one. The people heard her cries, but none came to her aid. For the silent pact of the people had become that surely no man among them had visited the whore. Surely not. And not all of them, to be sure. So they each lay awake in their beds and pretended to sleep through it, though they cringed with each shriek, while the wives, eyes wide open in quiet vengeance, observed their possuming men with all the wiles of farsight which woman has long possessed. In the little house in Elusa, saintly village, the virgin daughters of Anira held heated rags to the sweat-beaded face of their shaking mother until the child was born, though the flow never ceased. By morning, the eldest of these threefold graces, Analia, sat beside her, regal in splendid solemnity, even as she wondered what would ever be done for the new brother who lay in her arms. The fluids had been washed away and the cord neatly cut. Wrapped in a blanket, he slept in the peace only infants know, which cannot yet perceive the horrors of this world of man. Her sisters, Sinu and Talthea, who ever held merry heads, dressed their mother's now lukewarm body without their customary smiles, yet also without the tumultuous terrors one might expect of women so young, who had so suddenly endured so very much. "We will need more water for the floor," Analia said in kindness, already a matron to the others. "I will fetch it," Talthea answered, pausing once more to look on her mother's face, yet furrowed and stricken with the last moments of her agony, before she covered it with their last clean raiment of beaten canvas. "It is not light yet," Sinu said. "I shall come with you." So the family bucket held between them, the two once more made their way to the well in the heart of the town. It sat, patient and humble, at the crossing, where the road to Ambra met with the avenue of people's homes. Anira and her children lived on the furthest lot at the edge of the town, hidden behind a copse of bushes which bloomed with violet cockles in the spring. In high winter, wolves often dared to come so close, for there was no guard in the town. But now, in the height of summer, the morning was pleasant and safe. At first they did not see the figure who sat beside the well, for it had surely never been there before, and it hunched, veiled in the transparency which shadows cast. It was only as Sinu bent to draw the bucket from the deep that the figure raised her face, and eyes which seemed to glow in the coming twilight pierced her with a colder grief than she, even in her mourning, had ever known. Like ice they were, clear and powerful, so that the pupils were all consuming voids in shining planes of light. "Oh!" Sinu exclaimed, nearly dropping the rope which held the bucket. "Greetings, Mistress Traveler," she resumed her drawing. "Welcome to Alusa." The stranger gave no response, but only looked upon the sisters, the weight of her sorrow palpable. When the bucket was drawn and there was nothing to do but return to the house, Talthea turned once more to the visitor, who had not yet ceased to stare. "Mistress, you are welcome. Though it is summer, a seat beside a well on the highway belies the hospitality of our town. Any hearth in Alusa will welcome you and give you board. But if you will walk with us, though we have had much grief this night, we will gladly serve you in your journey." "You cannot know grief," the woman said, her voice chilled with bane solitude. "None who walk among the living can feel what I have felt." The sisters were so startled by the harshness of her words that they looked to one another. Talthea, no more than 12, made to turn away, but Sinu, 3 years her elder, drew her back. "I would not question your wisdom, mistress," she said, "but come with us even so, and we will share with you what means we have. Perhaps our company will bring you ease." "A prideful hope," the woman said. But she rose, her long cloak spreading wide behind her. "Lead on." Analia was still sitting by the hearth, the babe in her arms, when the door was pressed open and the stranger let in. The grim eyes glanced over the meager dwelling in one sweep before they came to lock upon the child. Then they went wide, flushed with the first wave of new emotion the sisters had seen. "You are not the mother of this infant," the stranger said. "No, mistress," Sinu spoke, pouring the bucket of water into the pot set in the hearth. "This very night our mother gave birth." "Where is she now?" the stranger asked, stumbling lightly forward to sit in the chair beside Analia. "She lies upon the bed, mistress," Talthea answered. "Even there." The stranger's eyes flickered to the covered form, then back to the child. "I see." Silence fell upon them all. Talthea remained standing, looking with quiet awe upon the woman whose features were no longer hidden by the night. Sharp and strong she was, no older than midlife, yet with the straight, pleasant skin that belongs only to the young. Sinu moved to the cupboard, where she took down a plate and began to place upon it cheese and a bit of bread. "Will you take food?" she asked. "What will you feed the child?" the stranger said, ignoring the question. "We do not know," Analia said. "There is some milk in our mother's breasts yet, but it will not last till midday. Our brother will soon follow her, though we would love him." "Has he a name?" the stranger asked. "No," Analia answered. "I had a child," the stranger said, tall as she sat. Her cloak now seemed to be of a deep blue, swirling around her in the chair like the depths of the ocean. "It was not so long ago that she was lost." Her eyes burned with the pain which the sisters had remembered from her words at the well. Yet she was this time also flush with a new vigor, a purpose that was unmistakable. "I will feed your brother," she said. The sisters looked to each other again, each of them unsure in themselves, for even Analia, 17 and full of grace, was but a child. "Thank you," said Sinu. "There is grief enough in the world." For the first time, the stranger's eyes left the babe. She stared upon the young girl, frail in her charity. Sinu smiled in return, the smile one gives when mourning and pain are shared between two people. Analia stood and delivered the boy into the hands of the stranger, who suddenly seemed uncertain of herself as she received him into her arms. But only a moment later, he was half hidden in the great draperies of her oceanic garment. The sisters, reverent in silence by the fire where the water in the pot was beginning to boil, and the icy eyes of the stranger doted upon the form in her arms as he began to nurse.